This episode of Greenhouse Grower to Grower is sponsored by Bartlett Instrument Company. Bartlett's Head Grower app allows growers to remotely control, monitor, and analyze their facilities from anywhere. You can adjust your settings, get notifications, and receive reports to your email using the platform. The Head Grower app is compatible with Bartlett's Climate Boss, Time Boss, and Weather Boss controllers. Go to bartinst.com. to learn more.
Welcome to Greenhouse Grower to Grower, the podcast where we talk to growers from across the greenhouse industry about market trends, innovation, their biggest challenges and opportunities, and more. I'm Brian Sparks, editor of Greenhouse Grower. Doug Cole is the owner of DS Cole Growers, a young plant and finished plant grower based in Loudoun, New Hampshire. The team at DS Cole is constantly on the hunt for what's new, and the company also places a huge emphasis on certification for clean production, sustainability, and more. I caught up with Doug in the middle of a busy spring season, right before he leaves for California spring trials, to talk about these issues and a whole lot more. Here's our conversation. I wanted to first thank you for taking some time. I know this is a busy time of year for everybody in this industry. Spring season is always chaotic, but fun is kind of the terminology that I hear a lot. So before we get into 2024, though, and how that's going, I do want to take a step back and just look at this past year, how that performed for DS Cole Growers, and what were some of the highlights for you and your team this year?
Yeah, that's a good point, because none of us, and I'm sure you heard it over and over, knew what to expect when COVID came and after COVID went. And I think we're in the same boat as everyone else, where COVID, just the sales were out of sight, and people never didn't know where to stop, and they were on the finished sales. We even had a few people that would call up and say, look, I need stuff. I don't even care what you put on the truck. Instead of saying, gee, I might send that back. It was a little small. It was just, send me stuff.
Yeah.
Those days came and went, and that was fun. But so last year was more or less getting back to what we could call the normal. Mm-hmm. People bought more normally, and we're a little more concerned. The weather was a little bit not so agreeable in the New England area last spring. And as we're seeing more and more, once June hit, let's say in our area, and definitely July, sales just pretty much disappear. And we're all looking as growers to say, well, what are you going to grow in the summer? What are you going to grow in the fall? And it sounds like lately people, instead of saying, oh, there's all these opportunities, they're trying to get, I don't want to say realistic, but maybe a little bit more realistic and say, you know what, we can't stretch the season forever. Yeah. So if you're going to grow something for the summer, let's be smarter. Let's grow what's really going to sell and not throw product away.
Yeah.
And I think that is what some of our focus is here, is to look for more products that will sell not just June, July, and August, but year-round. And that is where, for our business, we've been doing a lot of work with houseplants of one type or another. We've also found some real winners, like Sunbeckia, a Rudbeckia Sunbeckia from tissue culture, from a German breeder that just really wows the customer in late summer, and could be planted along with mums. But getting back to sales, I think we're back to what we used to know. And okay, it is cyclical. It's not forever through the season. We're expecting a good, let's say normal, good year this year. And we hope we continue to make our mix of offerings such that that comes true.
I think, you know, that would speak for the rest of the industry too, that normal would be a good thing with all the fluctuation that we've seen the past couple of years. I would imagine that that's got to be comforting to see that. Have you noticed anything in terms of, you know, the new consumers that we've gained since the pandemic started? Changes in, you know, what they're looking for, the plants are looking for, how they look at plants, what and how they even shop for plants?
Yeah, we do. And a couple of the topics we just touched on, the houseplants have been really interesting to them. things that at my age we used to grow in the 70s and 80s, those houseplants are now looked at as somewhat new to them, and also anything else different. And it's not always a new variety, it's just different. And yeah, that makes it fun. You know, we're not dairy farmers, we're not growing milk and seeing how much we can produce. We're trying to find and reinvent old products and different size pots and different. And we're so fortunate that we're able to repackage in ways to make something old seem new. It is new in a sense. So that's a lot of fun. And then also, we also have a garden center not far away. And when I'll be down there, I'm really always interested to see the younger buyer spend so much time reading the vegetable pack labels. They really enjoy that. The other thing we notice is, good or bad, that hanging baskets, which seem to, you never have, used to have enough in our area, we're finding that the hanging basket sales are not robust. I'll say that, you know, we sell out, but it's not like it used to be. You could never get enough. So yeah, that's the only thing we see that might be a decline, I'll say.
Do you think that is more like people like living in like townhouses and apartments where they may not have the space to have a bunch of hanging plants?
I'm hearing more that they get frustrated that like any purchase that is special, you know, you don't have to have a hanging basket or a plant, that they die too quickly. You know, no matter how hard they try, come a few weeks, a few months, they just die. They miss a day of water and they lost it. And that frustrates them. Whereas my impression is that they'll put a lot of effort into those large pots or planters that'll go on the front steps. They hold more water. They seem to have much more success with them. So we're happy for that, that they're putting a lot of effort into those planters, those big planters.
As you look back at this year and then even in the years prior, what would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned about how, you know, just at the higher level, how you run DS Cole Growers and how the business is continuing to evolve?
The biggest thing that I bet most people will talk about in one form or another is the labor issue. And it used to be you tell someone what to do and they do it, right? And you could say it nicely or not so nicely, and it, you know, all got done. And now we're always nice, and if we're not real nice, we might not see that employee again. So we're trying to be firm and nice and make sure our staff is all a team, which we truly want. We also finally, a couple of years ago, started using the H2A program as a wholesale grower. We should have done it a long time prior, and we doubled it this year. It's been just such a breath of fresh air. We get these guys that come in, and they want to work every minute they can work. And this time of year, we're really a young plant producer, so we're working all the time, 7 days a week. These guys will work 7 days a week. It's like 80 hours a week. They just work sun up, past sundown. They got lights on their heads sometimes. It's amazing. And they work. They really work. So I think the biggest lesson, going back to your question, is how to work with labor, since that is our biggest cost. That's our biggest lesson of how things have changed.
Yeah. So you've got your H2A workers working side by side with folks who have been on your team for a while. How do you deal with that dynamic then?
Everything's been good. I mean, people told me it was going to be good, and they're right. I have we have all Jamaican guys, so there's not a language barrier, maybe accent barrier between us a little bit, but it's all fun, and they really get along, and they're always, you know, working, so that people don't get upset about slacking, so to speak. So yeah, it works.
Okay. So as you get into 2024 then, and I know, you know, this is the peak of the season right now, but any of the big projects that you're working on that you want to talk about? Or I know, like, for example, plant trials are a big part of what you guys do. Is that kind of shaping up in terms of how you're going to approach trials this year?
Well, backing off that one question, I should say, as far as changes, we plan on. You got me thinking of equipment. You know, we've been updating and our potting equipment, robots, things that it's time. You know, things don't last forever.
Yeah.
And this year we're going to probably raise one of our older Venlo house areas to a higher height to get a better climate. We're going to put in fog system. We've started switching over to LED lights. And I shouldn't say switching. I'm keeping the older HIDs. And I really like them for propagating because they add a little heat to the crop. Even though the LED guy said that's an inefficient way, it really does work.
Okay.
So any new lighting, we're going LED. And then lastly, did I say a fog system?
Not yet, but okay. All right.
Yeah. And then as far as trials go, it's ongoing. We find now that on certain products, we're trialing all year. So if I can get something... And I guess I'm talking about something that might be more of a foliage plant, for example, and or from tissue culture. We might be working on that throughout the year. And it's sometimes not as much always about the variety, but the form it's in, so to speak. It's better to go tissue. Is it better to go division? And we'll try different ways to do different things that our customer hopefully will have better results in. For example, for an off-season product, we now carry St. Paulia, African violets. Okay. So those come in, and those actually come in from Dumin, and we stick those. And it's a chicken or an egg situation. Do we carry the product and hope people will buy them, or do we wait for people to ask? And it seems to us that if we wait for people to ask, it's usually too late or it might not happen. So we have to go out on a limb, I feel, and bring product to the market, or I should say from us to the market, to see how it's going to go. So it's new for us, and that would just be an example of something we're starting we started working on just a few months ago, and now it's out there in availability. We didn't necessarily wait until September. In the meantime, we, like most everybody in our business, we are getting trials from most of the breeders. And it's a tremendous list, good, bad, or otherwise, to watch. So we will be watching the new trials, including going out to California in a couple of weeks.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, we'll have a full team out there as well. So you were talking about technology there a couple minutes ago. And, you know, as you look to, you know, various types of new technology to implement, how do you work with your team to decide, okay, is this going to be the best fit for our company? And what's the return on investment going to be? And, you know, what's going to make the most sense to help us grow a crop more efficiently, but doing so in an economically efficient way as well?
Yeah, that's a tough one. We talk and we talk and we talk. And what do you think? And I guess we're not like, we're not like Coca-Cola or somebody where we can sit down intelligently all the time and put a return on investment on everything, you know, and calculate it. So I guess a good example to me is our LED lights. You know, I can't prove what the return is going to be.
Right.
Somebody else might be able to do that. I find it difficult. It's let's say we're a lettuce grower, or especially a lettuce grower with a indoor grow, a warehouse grow. You know, you got to have it. It's your only source of lighting. There's no sun, and you can calculate the need, I think, fairly easily with a lot of paper and pencils. But for us, we really only need these lights for a few months of the year. So on paper, it's a tough thing to justify sometimes. So we look at it as, can we compete and have the proper quality with or without the lights? And then we feel we have to do it and just make it a long-term investment, because that's a tough one. In my opinion, that's a tough one. If we raise that greenhouse, am I really going to produce that much of a better product, or will it will it help just enough for other reasons? For example, we found that it's tough to put fog in this greenhouse at the height that it's at. Some of that fog will drop out into droplets at the height it's at. So if we raise it, we can now do something different, which is adding fog. So I'm not answering your question. It's a tough one. The potting machine is an easier example. You know, we're just putting too much downtime on the old potting machine, and too much time fixing it. It's time for a new one. So I'm not answering it really well as far as return on investment. Pure calculation.
Well, I mean, as you said too, I mean, everybody does it differently, and there's no perfect science to it anyway. So, you know, the approach you guys are taking seems to make a lot of sense.
This episode of Greenhouse Grower to Grower is sponsored by Bartlett Instrument Company. Bartlett's Head Grower app allows growers to remotely control, monitor, and analyze their facilities from anywhere. You can adjust your settings, get notifications, and receive reports to your email using the platform. The Head Grower app is compatible with Bartlett's Climate Boss, Time Boss, and Weather Boss controllers. Go to bartinst.com to learn more.
I want to ask about certification. I know plant certification has been an important part of what DS Cole does. Can you talk about, you know, why that's so important to you as a company? And then anything new, any new focus areas that you may be looking at as you continue to grow?
Yeah, we've done a lot with certification. We have a potted herb program, year-round herb program with a supermarket chain in the area. So we have a GAP certification there. And because we do USDA GAP, it's pretty simple. That's the simple one. As far as our other certifications, we've been with MPS since the beginning, and you know, we learned a lot, and we feel quite well in PSA. It doesn't go without its challenges, and we feel that it maybe doesn't sell more plants, but it really brings our crew together, our team together, to do a better job proactively. To save fertilizer, to save water, heat, and definitely as focused on pesticide use and softer chemicals. So it's really helped us as a company, even if it doesn't necessarily make money, quote unquote. We all thought maybe people would buy more product because of MPS certification, until or unless some of the larger stores, box stores, start demand it, which may happen, may never happen. I don't know if the sales is demand is the issue. It's more doing a better job. And every time we do better with our MPS score, it means we hopefully have saved some money also.
Yeah.
So in that regards, that's been really good. And then we also use the Canadian Greenhouse Certification Program. And that's very important to us, since every week we ship many boxes to Canada. And by using this program, we are able to not call in a USDA, what's the word, last certifier, agent to get us a phyto certificate. So we are able to self-certify and literally just keep track and put a number on every box. So that we don't have to have literally a phyto for every box. We're in the program, and that saves so much time. That's been very helpful. It does take work throughout the year to make sure that you're audited properly. It was not an easy task. It took a lot of time, but we feel for a young plant, as a young plant producer going to Canada, it's been very helpful.
Okay.
And if I go on one more, we got involved with SANC, SANC's nursery certification, systematic approach to nursery certification. And that came about through American Hort meetings, where we thought we'd give it a shot and be a guinea pig along with a few others like Star Roses. And what we were able to do is help cobble together with the SANC state organization people. We were able to work together to get the rules, that's not the word, but the rules of SANC and how you qualify to parallel with the same certification rules, I'll call them, as the Canadian Greenhouse Program. Because what we could see is, oh my God, here's another program, another set of rules and protocols for SANC, if you even do it. And then there's one for this Canadian certification. They're almost the same because they're not focused on sustainability. They're focused on clean product. So what we're trying to do is satisfy both programs and hopefully make it one step, one easy step, so that they're almost the same, even though that's not 100%. The greenhouse, the SAG program is really meant for intrastate or interstate commerce so that Florida could ship to Maine and we could ship to California without doing extra phytos. They're not there yet. You have to have a lot of people involved to get the mass going to make it work super efficiently. But it's another step towards a program to make it theoretically easier for everyone. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like it's all about efficiency. So, I mean, you've got all these different programs that each have their own layers and goals that you have to meet. But as long as you can identify what are some of the more common goals and layers, then, you know, it's one less step that your team has to take to accomplish the same goal for different programs, it sounds like.
So, and I'll add to see if I can sum it up. USDA GAP is not for fun or feel good. The store makes us do it, okay? And the GPS, the Greenhouse Certification for Canada, I didn't say, I said GPS, it's GCP, I think is the right acronym. We have to do that unless we want to call the inspectors in every week for a bunch of phytos. Right. And then the SAG was just a project to go with it. And MPS, of course, we don't have to do it, but we feel it's worthy. And it helps us be a better company and economically also. And I don't mean just a foo-foo, feel-good, better company.
Right. So, like, when you look at all this, you know, you've got different regulations, different protocols to follow, and then taking a step back in some of the other areas, you know, emergence of, you know, new technology, new varieties, whatever it is. What do you do in terms of just kind of keeping up with what's out there and making sure that you're staying on top of industry trends and then new ideas that you could potentially implement at the greenhouse?
Lots of things, like reading your publication and as many others as we can, even if we just skim through it. That's huge. That's a daily event. And then traveling, you know, going to see what others do, talking on the phone. One nice thing about being a young plant producer is we talk to salespeople a lot that are selling our product throughout the country. So you get a lot of feedback, and we, not just feedback, but a lot of trends are going on out there. I've got the benefit of one of my sons is a Duman rep in the whole eastern part of the U.S. now. Okay. So we're always hearing what's going on here, what's going on there. So just these types of contacts are huge. American Hort, going to visit, going out to CAST. You know, going out to, I don't know, the breeders might not like this, but when I go to CAST, it's partly to see the varieties, but it's really to talk and see what's going on and see what somebody else might be doing, or meaning a breeder or another grower. Oh, that's how they grow this? We never tried that. It's not about necessarily the plants. We could get that, you know, just looking in articles, but we want to talk to people. And that includes going to Europe, too.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that the breeders would really like that. I mean, because, I mean, when they're out there, it is about the plants, but it's about a lot of other things as well. And, you know, you can only have, and, you know, I know, like, Dr. Alan Armitage will say this a lot in our magazine, you can only have so many new plants. You have to also look at, you know, what's the consumer going to want? What's the grower going to want? What's going to, you know, what can a plant do other than have a nice color or look nice?
Right. And I'll digress or fork off for a second. When you said that, when you talked about only so many new colors, so many new plants, I don't know. Does it ever end? Because I think a lot of us are looking at the yellow Calibrachoa and the blue Calibrachoa and say, oh my God, how many do we really have to have out there? Do we really need all these? Is it, you know, so it's exciting to find something else if we follow me. So that's where maybe African violets came in. It's like it's like a new product rather than beat ourselves all up over who's got the best yellow calico on.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, and the timing of this is nice, too, because this episode will come out right before California spring trials start. So, you know, we're talking at just the right time about this.
Yeah.
You know, as we start to wind down a little bit here, you know, I know as you come into this year, you know, we talk to a lot of growers in the industry. There's seems to be growth in terms of, you know, adding production space, adding size. But then you're also seeing a lot of growers dealing with some significant challenges, whether it's labor and energy costs to, you know, other business management approaches that in some cases have led a lot of growers to, you know, shut down as this year starts. What do you guys do as a company to address some of these challenges and kind of make sure that you're not getting into that same type of situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're trying to come up constantly with that famous line of what's new? What do you got that's new? Because that's all people ask you, right? What's new? So if we can keep ourselves of interest to all our buyers, that's really our goal, because we really don't know if a commodity, and I say that nicely, like a geranium, is going to matter one way or another. How can we get enough money for it, et cetera? We hope so. But for example, we took on citronella, and now it's probably one of our highest sale items, because I had no idea it was in such high demand as a young plant. So all of a sudden, citronella is like top of the list. Eucalyptus as a young plant, it's skyrocketed in numbers. Who would have known? So that's what we're trying to do, if that helps answer the question, is find these items. Neither of those are new items. They're just all of a sudden in vogue. And can we find those items that people are really looking for, whether they know they're looking for it or not? Can we guesstimate and show enough people samples that we can get a good flavor of, well, this is something worth investing space in? It's maybe not as price sensitive, so we don't have to worry as much. But I think that comes back to the famous what's new, or what's the new packaging for a certain item that's been around, but we're going to do it in a different way.
Okay. All right. You know, last question I have is as you look towards the future and the future of floriculture, what excites you the most about the future of this industry, both at DS Cold Growers and for the industry as a whole? What are you most excited about?
I guess it's personal when I say this, but it's repeating what I've been saying, that I just love finding new stuff. And as long as we can find new stuff, even if it's old stuff, but something new to the market, it makes it fun. That's my version. And I think, going back to, in a sense, what you just asked me, is that's what makes us move forward, that we want to be known as someone who has new stuff. And I think that applies to anyone, including the consumer, of course. When they walk in, like any other product in life, they want to walk in and find something new. And I think that's what will keep us going, or in reality.
Okay. You know, I actually do have one other question for you. So, as I said, we're recording this right in the middle of the spring season. So, you know, when things are going crazy and you're filling orders and shipping things out, what do you do to just kind of keep your team focused on what the end goal is going to be?
That it comes to an end sooner or later. And if we can just get over the next few weeks, I mean, we literally been, as I mentioned, working 7 days a week for a while now, which is working out fine. And as long as we can do what we've been doing with changing days for different employees and keeping the momentum going, and as staff leaders, we got to come in with a smile on our face so that no matter how good or bad things are going for ourselves as a business or personally, we come in with a smile and it starts the day off right. And it seems to work, and it does come to an end, even though it doesn't feel like it ever will. It'll slow down eventually.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more at greenhousegrower.com. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen, and please leave us a rating as it helps other podcast listeners find the show.